Has your brand been struggling to reach the correct audience when advertising? We've all done it. Maximize privacy filters on our phones and apps because who wants to be talking about something for it to pop up mysteriously later? It's weird and everyone hates it. Did you know that podcast advertising is way more effective than display advertising? With 67% of listeners remembering brands and 63% making a purchase after hearing them. You know how much we love Zencastr, and their new creator network is no different. Whether you want to diversify your ad spend, add a new marketing stream, or test out podcast ads, Zencastr's creator network makes it easy for brands to connect with podcasters. Zencastr's creator network is a perfect place for you to get into podcast ads and sponsor your favorite creators, like us. So stop wasting advertising dollars on ad campaigns that aren't targeting your niche audience. Let Zencastr's creator network match you with podcasters who can ensure that your target audience is being reached. We love Zencastr so much, and being able to see ad opportunities come across our dashboard with a percentage match to see how much our audiences line up is game-changing. It helps creators really get behind brands that mean something to them. And with a podcast show for just about anything you can think of, your brand is no exception. Are you interested in sponsoring this show or podcast ads for your business? Go to zen.ai/gruesome and fill out the contact information so Zencastr can help you bring your business story to life. Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. I am Connie, along with, I can't think of anything right now because I just went blank, Meg. And she's going to talk to us tonight about Mark Kilroy.
Thank you for that wholesome introduction.
No, I had like a million ideas. And then when I went, I write them down and I didn't write anything down. And it's like, I was like looking around for something in my office. Well, here we are.
You don't have to explain yourself. No worries. I understand. I also go blank sometimes. That's when I get the weird ones. So there must be something in the air, and that is that it dropped below 65 degrees this week.
It's soup season! Soup season, baby!
And obviously, we got our pumpkin spice coming back around. Did you get your apple chai?
Look, I think that all fast food restaurants, coffee place, everyone is out to get me. It's got to be the full moon, Mercury, all of the things. Because I went and I was like, can I have a caramel apple cider with chai? And they were like, we don't have the cinnamon dolce syrup. And I was like, I don't know what that means. Can I, like, what is that? We don't have
So the caramel apple spice is steamed apple juice with cinnamon dolce syrup. That's what it is. But you could have just been like, can I have a chai with steamed apple juice?
They didn't have the stuff.
Oh, yeah, we have them.
Nope, they didn't have the stuff for chai. And then I was like, can I have a pumpkin spice latte? They're like, oh, we're out of that too. And I was like, I guess I'll just have a birthday cake pop, because I immediately froze. And at that point, I wanted nothing else. And so I just got a birthday cake pop for my daughter, just like,
oh, not for you. I thought you were by yourself. I'll just have a birthday cake pop to cry on because you just crushed all my hopes and dreams.
Oh, no. Well, so with this weather comes the spooky talk. You did it last week.
I'm in. Tag in. But your trigger warning for the week, murder, animal cruelty, dismemberment, occult/religious talk. I think that's it, but I will warn you that I might have missed one, maybe two. Could have happened.
Jesus.
Mark Kilroy was not the average University of Texas at Austin student. Just the year before, he had given up a free ride and his basketball scholarship and his place in the Lambda Chi Alpha fraternity at Tarleton State University in order to go to the University of Texas Austin as a pre-med student. Before college, he had been an athlete, an honor student at Santa Fe High School, and he was an active member of the Boy Scouts of America. He attended Catholic Church with his mom, Helen, who was a volunteer paramedic. His dad, Jim, who was a chemical engineer, and his brother. His goal at the time of his disappearance was to study for the MCAT and get into medical school. However, like most college students, and especially as a 21-year-old junior in college, when spring break rolls around, you got a spring break. He was ready for vacation. And he and his friends opted to spend their week at the ever-popular spring break destination, South Padre Island in Texas. Have you ever been there?
No, but I've heard a lot about it.
I have too. And I say destination because spring break on South Padre Island is a tradition that runs through like March 5th to the 28th. And it started in the mid-80s because Texas was one of the last holdouts from moving the drinking age from 19 to 21. So initially, you could drink in Texas at 19, and then they bumped it up to 21 with the rest of them.
I was wondering what the lure was, because I heard, and this is nothing against our Texas listeners, if I'm wrong, please tell me, but I heard like the beaches are kind of like, like not the best. And I was like, why do people want to go there? But now it makes sense.
But we've never been there, so we can't speak to the beaches.
I can't speak to beaches. I'm also such a beach snob because I love the Gulf side of Florida so much. Like, that's a hill I'll die on forever. That those are the best
beaches. Is it that the Gulf side of Texas?
Yeah, but I guess it's like a different, like it's like different over there.
That's a different Gulf. It's the different side of the Gulf. Okay.
Someone's going to be so mad about that. Like, I'm just joking.
I have never been on a spring break trip, so.
Oh, I used to spring break. Like,
I remember, I recall you going on spring break. It was never my thing to go. But on March 10th, 1989, Mark's BFF, Bradley, finished his finals early and drove to Austin to pick him up. They grabbed their two other buddies, Bill and Brent, and they headed toward South Padre Island a little before midnight. They checked into the Sheraton and began partying immediately. The next day, they started out by heading to the beach. They hit up all the beer sponsors who were hosting free events. Later that evening, they met up with a group of girls from Purdue University, which I had to mention because, as you know, we're Midwest girls.
Hey.
And they partied into the next day. It sounds like spring break. The next day, their plans involved going to the Miss Tan Line contest and crossing the border into Mexico to continue raging. They left their hotel that evening and stopped at a Sonic in Port Isabel, where the boys happened to run into a different group of girls from the University of Kansas that were also headed to Mexico. So the groups joined up and drove on. They parked at the Gateway International Bridge in Brownsville, Texas, before crossing into Mexico on foot. They spent... I thought that too. I was like, you just walk across? Just, all right. Okay. Whatever you got to do to party. They spent most of the evening at a club in Matamoros before heading back, and they had so much fun that they opted to do it again the next night. A lot of other spring breakers had the same idea. In fact, nearly 15,000 young adults from all over the United States lined the streets of Matamoros, looking for cheap booze that they were legally allowed to drink because the drinking age was only 18. The boys ended up at a bar called Los Sombreros before heading to the Hard Rock Cafe. Very 80s, but by the wee hours of the morning, Mark Kilroy found himself chatting with one of the contestants of the Miss Tanline pageant. And because of the sheer amount of people, it was hard for the boys to cross back over the border on foot and all at the same time. So a couple of them went ahead and walked to a restaurant that was closer to the border than where they currently were. And as Kilroy was saying goodbye to Miss Tanlines, his other friend Bill ran to the bathroom. But when Bill returned, Mark was nowhere to be seen. Bill found his other friends, and the guys searched for Mark for hours, even as the streets cleared and everything began to shut down around 4:30 a.m. The guys crossed back over, thinking maybe Kilroy was waiting near the car, but he wasn't. After waiting a few minutes, they legitimately just thought that he probably left for the hotel, he left with someone else, he would turn up the next day. But the next day, they woke up and Kilroy's whereabouts were still unknown. The group called police to report him as missing, which honestly surprised me because when I think of like dudes on spring break, and I get, please don't come at me for this, but my thought is if one of them goes missing, they're going to wait a few days to be like, uh-oh, something's really wrong, not immediately call the police to report him missing.
That's actually really good on them.
Yeah,
because I'm
looking out for their boys.
My senior spring break, I went with like a bunch of people we graduated with, and there was like a solid day we didn't know where one of us was.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and you didn't immediately think.
No, we were just like, oh, I bet there was such and such.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not unusual because police said that students were often reported missing and they would turn up in a few days, nursing a killer hangover, and they were usually fine. Something strange was happening in Matamoros around this time, though. Mark Kilroy was one of 60 people who had been reported missing within the city in only the first 3 months of 1989.
That's significant.
That is significant. Mark happened to get significantly more press than all of these disappearances because he had a relative that worked for the U.S. government. And that person was able to help establish a police task force in Brownsville, Texas, the city where they had parked and then walked into Mexico from. And that was meant to help search for Mark. So already, like, this case got so much more attention than all of these other people disappeared because this was someone who had a lot of privilege, who had someone high up who could look out for them.
We see that a lot.
Mm-hmm. But it became kind of like a PR nightmare for Matamoros because it was tourist season and they didn't want people thinking that tourists were going missing. And because of that, allegedly, the Mexican police force said that Mark had disappeared in Brownsville. They weren't being as helpful as maybe they could or should have been. But his friends vehemently denied that he had disappeared in Brownsville. They had been in the city. Still, both U.S. and Mexican officials worked together on a strategy to find Mark. They questioned informants, witnesses. They sought out tips on where he might be. Investigators suspected that Kilroy may have been a victim of a robbery gone wrong, of drug violence, but the leads were few and far between. They ended up hiring a hypnotist to interview Mark's friends because there were so few leads on where he might be. Under hypnosis, one of the guys recalled that they had seen a young Hispanic man with a face scar. They saw him clap Kilroy on the shoulder and say, "Hey, don't I know you from somewhere?" But outside of that little blip, none of them could remember the exact moment or location where Kilroy had disappeared. Gonna go out a limb and say they're probably under the influence of any number of things.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's spring break.
It makes sense that they wouldn't be able to remember. Police feared the worst. Possibly abduction for ransom, but they hadn't heard anything, so that was unlikely. They began to do flyovers of remote locations, searching for a body. All-terrain vehicles searched rugged trails. Border Patrol was ordered to seek any bodies that they might find in the Rio Grande. Jim and Helen, Mark's parents, flew into Mexico and distributed more than 20,000 handouts and offered a $15,000 reward for anyone who could help them find their boy. They met with the Attorney General, Texas Governor William Clements, and a U.S. Senator in hopes that the U.S. government might be able to speak with the Mexican government and somehow work together to bring Mark home. But even people that the Kilroys knew from home had traveled to Mexico to assist the family in handing out flyers and searching for Mark. On March 26th, Mark's disappearance was highlighted on America's Most Wanted. It gave the case nationwide attention, but no new leads were discovered. And Jim and Helen went back home to withdraw Mark from the University of Texas at Austin. A break wouldn't come for another 3 weeks. It had been 3 weeks after Mark was first missing on April 1st, 1989. Mexican federales manning a border patrol checkpoint witnessed a truck blow through a roadblock without stopping. The vehicle had come from Texas and went speeding down Mexican Federal Highway 2. In the vehicle was Serafin Hernandez Garcia, a nephew of a local drug lord. He was followed to the Santa Helena Ranch outside of Matamoros, but instead of arresting him, officials opted to follow him. primarily because this man was associated with well-known drug dealings in the area. And not only drugs, police had been told by an informant that cult-like activity was happening at Santa Helena. They were probably more worried about the drugs, but their interest was piqued. The police continued to gather information on Hernandez Garcia and the ring of organized crime members around the ranch over the next several days. And on April 9th, investigators returned to the ranch and arrested Serafin, Elio Hernandez Rivera, David Serna Valdez, Sergio Martinez, and Domingo Reyes Bustamante. But those guys could not care less about being arrested. They were incredibly relaxed as they sat in jail waiting for what came next. One of the ranch's caretakers was shown a photo of Mark Kilroy in question. The man told police, "Yeah, I saw him." And he pointed toward a shed at the back of the ranch. In the jail. In the jail, the men began to be questioned separately, and their relaxed demeanors eventually wore off, and Serafin was the first one to start talking. He confessed that over the last few months, many, many people had been murdered at Santa Helena, including Kilroy. The murders had been ordered by Adolfo Costanzo, a man who practiced and taught others rituals of human sacrifice in order to protect his ring of drug traffickers. Costanzo believed that by sacrificing humans, their group would be granted strength, abundance, and immunity from the law, and they would suffer from no injuries. As they were in jail, not immune from the law suddenly. That's probably why his demeanor changed, because he was like, oh no, I'm actually in trouble.
Yeah, this is big.
Adolfo had told Serafin to go find a gringo to sacrifice, specifically. Adolfo Costanzo was born November 1st, 1962, in Miami, to a 15-year-old Cuban immigrant, Delia Aurores Gonzalez de Valle. After her first husband died, Delia and Adolfo moved to Puerto Rico, where she remarried. While in Puerto Rico, Adolfo was baptized as Roman Catholic. He served as an altar boy, but he was also influenced by his mother's participation in Palo Mayombe, which is a secretive religion that has been linked to animal sacrifice and grave robbing for human bones to be used in rituals. It's kind of involved. Like, I wish I could give you a better explanation of it, but it's really something maybe you just need to go give, like, Palo Mayombe a Google if you want to learn more about it. It's kind of like a mishmash of lots of things. Anyways, the family returned to Miami in 1972, and Adolfo's newest stepfather died shortly after. Left the family with some money, but his next stepfather was involved with the local drug trade and the occult as well. Costanzo and his mama were arrested several times for petty crimes, mostly theft and vandalism. Adolfo graduated from high school but dropped out of college. His mom believed that he had psychic abilities because he had supposedly predicted the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan in 1981. And I did not know that Ronald Reagan had been attempted to be assassinated. But I was like, oh, cool.
We had a football coach for, like, a government teacher. That's probably why we didn't know
this. I'm gonna bet that is what I took. I took AP government, and never once did I learn about the assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan.
I too took AP government, and I didn't learn that either.
I honestly can't tell you what I learned in that class. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of sad.
Nope.
As a teenager, he befriended a Haitian Palo Mayombe priest who taught him the skills necessary to be a drug dealer slash con artist slash cult leader.
That's quite the resume.
Honestly, I think you could, leadership skills, definitely, I would say. Costanzo visited Mexico City in 1983 and paid his way by reading tarot cards, which sounds really cool, but not for this guy. He had soon recruited two men, Martin and Omar, to be his servants, lovers, and disciples. Costanzo moved to Mexico City in 1984, and over the next few years, he became the leader of a full-fledged cult with drug dealers, musicians, and even police officers that were under his command. The cult, based in Matamoros, sold drugs, held high-priced occult ceremonies, and by at least 1987, had murdered people for human sacrifice. And if you're like, what high-priced occult ceremony? In his ledgers that he kept, because he kept them on the books, Costanzo charged a Mexican City drug dealer $40,000 for magical protective services, some of which required Adolfo and his cronies to rob graves in order to find the human bones necessary for some of these rituals. He had at least 31 regular customers that he would do rituals requiring animal sacrifice for. These customers were paying like up to $5,000 for a ceremony. Adolfo
had insane.
He had a menu of animal ritual killings. And so you could pick the animal, like roosters were $6, goats were $30, boa constrictors were $450, zebras were $1,100, and there were even like African lion cubs listed at like $3,100.
Jesus.
And I'm guessing just like depending on the, you know, cost of the animal, you got more magic from it, you know.
Yeah.
Get more protection. But he was also a scam artist. So he once posed as a DEA agent to rip off a coke dealer in Guadalajara. He sold the stash that he stole from this coke dealer through his police contacts in his cult for $100K. Just like, we're out here having jobs.
And you
guys out here pretend selling African lion cubs.
You just pretend to be a DEA agent. Like, come on.
You're ripping off
How do
dealers.
I get that badge?
Like, just one guy? Like, you're going to believe one guy take your whole stock?
It just takes one charismatic person. That's how these cults start. One charismatic person.
And it was this guy. It was Adolfo. On April 30th, 1988, a family of, like, opposing drug dealers vanished under mysterious circumstances. They were reported missing on the 1st of May. Police noted melted candles and other evidence of strange religious ceremonies in the home that they disappeared from. After 6 days, officers began fishing the family's mutilated remains from the Zumpango River. 7 corpses were recovered in the course of a week, all bearing marks of sadistic torture. Fingers, toes, and ears were removed. Their hearts and sex organs were excised. Part of their spine was ripped from one body. 2 of them were missing their brains. The vanished part had gone into Costanzo's cauldron to build up strength for his greater conquests. As time went on, Costanzo's rituals became more gruesome and sadistic. People joined him, whether in fear or interest, because as time went on, he began to demand more sacrifices, like on demand. So competing traffickers coming to talk were tortured to death on the grounds at Ranch Santa Helena. Even his teenage cousins were sacrificed just because he needed a sacrifice now immediately, and they would vote and send up whoever they thought was least useful. According to Serafin Hernandez Garcia, he and other members of Costanzo's cult had mingled with the spring break students in Matamoros on the night of March 14th. As Kilroy stood on the street near his friends, one of the men lured him close to a truck. Kilroy approached the vehicle, and Hernandez Garcia, with another cult member, Malio Fabio Ponce Torres, grabbed him and wrestled him into the truck. Kilroy broke loose and ran, but he was intercepted by another vehicle driven by other members of the cult who took him prisoner at gunpoint. He was then subdued and handcuffed and placed in the back of the second car. The men left Kilroy inside the car overnight, and shortly after dawn, the ranch's caretaker went to see Kilroy and fed him bread, eggs, and water. About 12 hours after Kilroy was kidnapped, Costanzo and his men came to see him. They wrapped his face and mouth with duct tape and walked him through a field to a storage cabin with his hands still tied behind his back. And this storage cabin is that shed I mentioned earlier,
Okay.
Did
they target him because he was by himself?
I think yes, because he was standing there waiting for his friend to come back. I think he was probably drunk. He probably just looked like an easy target to these guys. Like, there's a guy that I bet we could get to come with this.
Yeah.
He had a very, like, approachable face. I'm sure he was being polite. Doesn't go into specifics about that because he's the only one that knew. But the shed that they were going to was full of all of the things that they use for these rituals, like cauldrons, animals, just trinkets and stuff like with magical properties that they kept.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the night of the 15th, Costanzo tortured and sodomized Kilroy. He was led out to the field where Costanzo killed him by chopping the back of his head and neck with a machete. His brain was boiled in a cauldron that Costanzo used to stew human and animal remains. Kilroy's legs were chopped off above his knees to facilitate his burial, and a wire was inserted into his spinal column so that once the body had decomposed, the bones could be pulled up from the soil easily.
That is horrific.
Yeah. I didn't even know. I had never heard that. Of all of the horrifying things that we have read, I was like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And it gets worse because they dug a hole and buried Kilroy's corpse. But Hernandez Garcia explained that the function of the wire was once they retrieved the bones to use, they would wear them as necklaces to ward off danger and injury.
That's gross.
They found the burial spots of Kilroy and eventually others because there were wires sticking out of the dirt, because that was where they knew that they needed to pull them up. And they made them, all those guys, go to the property and dig up all the bodies. They were like, guess what? You're on excavation duty. They unearthed 15 mutilated bodies, including Kilroy's, just at the Santa Helena Ranch, just there. All males who had been killed over a period of 9 months. They weren't all identified. Some of them were. On April 12th, the detainees were taken to the headquarters of the Mexican Federal Judicial Police in Matamoros for an informal press conference. There were more than 250 international journalists there to take pictures and ask questions. The suspects were paraded from the building's balcony and were allowed to answer questions from reporters. Elio Hernandez Rivero said that he was an ordained executioner under Costanzo and that Costanzo himself had murdered Kilroy. The camera zoomed in on the suspects. Hernandez showed his membership scars that he had on his shoulders, his back, his arms, and his chest. There were arrow-like cuts made with a hot blade. The marks were given to selected cult members with the authority to perform human sacrifice. By murdering Kilroy, Costanzo attracted international attention and really forced the Mexican government to focus their efforts on bringing him in and those involved. On April 11th, the day the bodies were exhumed from Santa Elena, Costanzo fled to a Holiday Inn in Brownsville before he flew from McAllen, Texas to Mexico City because he had an apartment there still. He escaped with several members of his cult. Costanzo, while at the apartment, ordered his follower to murder him and his boyfriend, Martin Quintana. He obliged, shooting them both with a machine gun while they hugged. Costanzo and Quintana were dead when police stormed the apartment he owned in Mexico City. And in the aftermath of the raid, 14 cultists were indicted on various charges, including multiple murder, weapons, and narcotics violations, conspiracy, obstruction of justice.
Now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. It's been no secret the struggles that I have had with ADHD. One of the biggest problems that I face is for my brain to stay in problem-solving mode when I get overwhelmed or overstimulated. It wasn't until I started therapy that I started utilizing the tools recommended to me that I was able to start crossing items off of my to-do list. I have tried numerous therapists of all different kinds of formats, but BetterHelp really does take the cake. Since starting therapy again, I feel more confident, less stressed. I know that at any point I can message my therapist, which has been great in situations where I'm overstimulated, and she is quick to respond. If you've been struggling, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, affordable, and it's entirely online. I took a quick survey that asked what goals I had, what experiences I've endured, and was matched with a therapist that very same day. And if you start with a therapist and decide that you're not satisfied, you can switch anytime and it's not a big deal. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/gruesome today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/gruesome.
Police in Mexico are still uncertain of Costanzo's final body count. And this area in Mexico is very superstitious, and so the police actually went to that ranch and burnt that shed to the ground. And they said, they didn't say, it's alleged that they did it because they knew that that's what would hurt Costanzo the most when he found out that his, like, ritual hut had been decimated.
It makes sense. The Spanish culture, Mexican culture in general, like, my grandmother is very superstitious, very spiritual. It was always like, oh, that's bad juju. That's bad juju. You know, I can't help but think that because there were so many males, that they weren't sexual in nature. Like, these kills weren't sexual in nature.
Well, Adolfo was gay. He was a gay man. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that some of them might have been. I know that they were ritualistic, but I feel like that's just a lot of people to just, like, keep upping the ante with and upping the ante with, especially with his last one, which they said, like, he was sodomized during.
That's what I was thinking. Like, when you said sodomy, like, when he was sodomized, I was like, that seems less than religious to me. Like, that seems less than, like.
Yeah, I think this guy would have ended up murdering people whether or not he was
a cult leader.
Involved. Yeah, yeah. And whether or not he was involved with the occult or not, he would have found a way.
It's almost like this was just his excuse to be able to do it so freely and, like, open with people not caring what he was doing.
It kind of gives me, like, Charles Manson vibes, you know? Like, I'm sure he did order a lot of people to do his killings, but he just, like, emanated a presence that people wanted to be around and people were drawn into, and he promised them, you know, great things and the things that he was capable of doing, which he obviously wasn't. But, and just the fact that, like, this started when he was a kid, you know, like, his mom was involved with stuff like this, and then his future stepdads were, and I don't know how two of his other dads died, but they also died.
It just sounds
like that was part of it.
It's such a huge jump from animal sacrifices to, like, full-on human sacrifices on a regular basis.
So I think Palo, not 100% sure, is typically animal. Like, I think does do animal sacrifices. But I think the human thing was just him. Like, if I get this much power from animals, I'll get even more power from humans.
Yeah.
And, like, you think about, like, when we covered the sorcerer and how he would, as you recall, suck the spit from their mouths because it gave them his power.
That's every time. Every time. It's saliva for me. It's
gross. I know. But
just think, Joe, had Kilroy's family not been who they are, how many more people would have been victims of him?
Especially because he had police under his wing. And that was another theory that people thought, like, this might be why the police in this area aren't on this as much as they could be, because there are people within.
I mean, the cartel owns most of Mexico. Like, yeah, that's not a secret.
You're on the payroll, like, you're going to do a lot less. But, and, like, his parents talked to the president after this happened. Like, they went all the way up. And they were obviously not happy. Who would be? But at least they got answers, you know? And there's so all of these other people who went missing in those 3 months, most of them probably didn't get answers. They probably, some of them still might not know what actually happened to their loved ones.
I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's always, you know, we're taught to be careful. Like, you know, I had to talk a million times before I went on, like, every spring break trip I went on. But in the moment, it's the last thing you're thinking about. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You're just having a good time.
You're just here to have fun.
This is like, I mean, I think of like our senior trip where it was like some real sketch shit happened. I mean, I was standing outside of a Walmart with a couple of the girls that went, like, asking grown men to buy us alcohol. Like, it's now I realize
that is sketch.
Like, whew. And then you
did any of them do it? Did you get anyone to do it? Yep, of course.
Each night we did it.
Guys, we blinked and summer is almost over. For parents, that means we are sending our kids back to school, and we know how important it is to start days off with a healthy, nutritious breakfast. Unfortunately, healthy and nutritious usually don't align with what our kids are hungry for. Never fear, parents. Magic Spoon takes the guilt out of those busy mornings. Magic Spoon comes in a variety pack with 4 flavors. Cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs. Also, only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. Our kids can experience the cereal we had as kids, only now it's super nutritious. Go to magicspoon.com/gruesome to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GRUESOME at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/gruesome and use the code GRUESOME, GRUESOME, to save $5 off. And thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
I almost didn't do this case because I didn't want to put that stigma on, like, visiting other countries for spring break. Because for the majority of thing, like, time, you know, this doesn't happen. Like, 98% of the time.
Risk of this happening in the United States.
Yeah, obviously.
I mean, it's... And now, trafficking is such a huge business for these sketchy-ass people that you run this risk going to the store. You run this risk. You're always going to be at a greater risk in a different country. Just how people who come to America from other countries are at a greater risk. There's language barriers. There's cultural differences. Like, you don't, you know. It's,
yes. I love how you said that. Yes. I couldn't have put it into better words. And we talked about it when people, like, in the human trafficking episode, when people come over here to be, like, you know, think they have a job, but they're actually forced into servitude. Yep. Whether that's cleaning houses or taking care of people's children or whatever.
And it's just always more difficult. We've had, you know, spring breakers from different countries come, and they come up missing, whether it's like sinister, like a murder, or it's, you know,
foreign exchange students.
Yeah, it's, you run that risk in your own country. You run a greater risk when you go to a different country.
When you're in unfamiliar territory.
Yeah. I mean, we run a risk going from, like, the Midwest when we were in California, because we had no idea where anything was. Like, we were in downtown LA, like, walking around, like, ooh, here we go.
We're just here to have fun.
So I think it's appropriate to still go and do these things. You cannot live your life in fear. You can be more cautious, more, like, aware of your surroundings.
Aware. Yeah.
But I think you're doing yourself a huge disservice if you're just like, I'm never going anywhere because something bad may happen. Something bad could happen at your own house. So
your house could burn down with you in it, babe.
Like, yeah, like, it's, there's risk everywhere. You have to, like, live a little.
Just a tiny little bit. Can't order your groceries forever.
I can, but
I will.
I'm still going to order my groceries, but, like, I still...
Not if I keep getting soft avocados, I'm not. I'm going to tell you right now.
I would just rather die than go grocery shopping.
At this point. I went into the store and went grocery shopping the other day, and it was so dead in there. Like, but of course, then the 14 people that were in there in the giant grocery store all checked out at the same time. And there's only one register, and they all say that's 20 items or ever under on the self-scan. And I was just like,
were you at Walmart?
No, it was at Meijer.
Meijer. Mm-hmm. It is rather, it's... The pandemic has real. I mean, people are finally starting to travel and like go places again, which I'm excited about because like I also want to travel and like go places. But like some things, like pandemic things, I will never go back to. And that's like going to a grocery store.
Go to a grocery store. I can't think of anything else that I really like was like, yep, this is the same. People staying 6 feet away from me at all times.
Yeah, I prefer that. I don't like you have to go, you have to walk around the entire store to find what you want. And then you always forget something. So you're like going back and forth, back and forth. I spend double the time making a grocery list because I make two grocery lists when I go to the store. I make my list. I write down everything what I need. And then I organize it by like where it is in the store. So I can try not to get to that point where I miss stuff. So it's just like too much time. And then I have to put it all on the
belt.
You
just like punch it in and someone else can do that for you.
Yeah. I don't do Instacart though. I only do like I specifically only use the Kroger, like their things,
their
like
pickup.
Yeah, they're top tier.
You know what else I miss though from pandemic times? I miss wearing a mask everywhere because like my eyebrows, best feature on my face. I didn't have to do anything. I just pop that sucker on. I'm like, let's go.
I still wear it if I don't want people to talk to me.
I'm sick. Don't even look at me. You'll catch it for sure. Right when you did that, I felt like a real cough in my throat, like you had given it to me, like a yawn.
I did.
It was a curse. It was a cursed cough. My love language is gift giving, and one of my favorite things to give is an experience. Which is why Let's Make Art is so awesome, because I can send my best friend Connie or even her kids the gift of learning how to paint and create. Anyone can have art supplies delivered right to their door in the form of monthly subscriptions, project kits, and supplies for a variety of activities. Whether you're a total beginner or you've mastered the arts, the supplies and tutorials in each art box are designed to encourage, support, and enhance your experience with art. Let's Make Art has taken the guesswork out of crafting and created kits for various mediums and interests. You can follow along with free tutorials courtesy of Let's Make Art's in-house artists to learn how to paint with watercolor or acrylics, or you could pick up art journaling. Go to letsmakeart.com and start your next art project today. Be sure to use our promo code GRUESOMEART, all one word, at checkout to save 20% off your first order. We've posted our special link in the show notes, and remember to use Gruesome Art to save 20% off. Thank you, Let's Make Art, for sponsoring this episode.
Man, I hate that. I love the landscape of Mexico. The beaches are chef's kiss. The culture is amazing. The food is amazing. But, you know, just like any place, like there are areas that aren't safe. And the cartel really does have a huge hold in some of the smaller areas. And it's
yeah, and like I don't think that they were even in an unsafe area. I think this is just a place where these, you know, predators had.
It's kind of like easy prey.
They were looking for exactly that, like a young dude that they could take back. And
of course, they're going to pick, you know, these guys who are intoxicated because in normal situations, they're not going to be able to, like, it's not as easy to subdue male victims. It's why it's actually kind of interesting.
And I think that's important when we talk about that, too, is that men can be victims. We don't, you guys should not forget that. It's not only women that find themselves in these situations. It is absolutely men as well.
Yeah.
And we should all stay aware.
Yeah. Have an extra set of eyes. We were talking about, like, going to college parties. My mother-in-law and I, our youngest is our daughter. And I said, I think I'm going to drill in the idea of you can't go and drink is like kind of that's done. You know, you have to set realistic expectations for your kids so they can meet those expectations and not like they always feel like
they're. And also, they have to make their own choices.
Exactly.
But I think dictate what their lives are going to be. They have to do that for themselves. You can just hope you give them good, like a nice enough groundwork that they can build up something on it.
But I think like it is important to be like, hey, if you're in a group of people, take turns. Someone has to be the Debbie, like someone has to be the Dee Dee. Someone has to be the one that's not letting the drunk girls go off with random guys or guys.
Were you calling a Dee Dee a Debbie Downer?
Yeah, I was.
They don't Debbie Downer.
It's not necessarily like you guys feel. I just feel like in college and stuff, it's like if you're making someone be the Dee Dee, they're like, fuck. Okay, fine.
I didn't want, but the next time. There's always that one person, though, that's like never, like they always end up, even if they are the DD, you find them like hammered.
That was me. Like, that was me. We would go to Ball State and I'd be like, I'm going to drive us home tonight. And then it's like, we're staying here. We're not going anywhere.
You just said, I'll just have one. I'll just have six. No problem.
You said shots. Sign me up. Oh my God, there's Jello shots, even more.
I have this disgusting memory of like everyone eating out of a bowl of Jello shots because they weren't in individual cups because I didn't have cups and everyone just had a spoon eating out of the same bowl. So gross.
I think about playing Edward 40 Hands with Smirnoff Ice and I get a vomit taste in the back of my mouth.
Or like playing beer pong with actual beer in the cups. And like, you're like, well, we dip it in the same cup of water that has dirt and hair in it. It's fine.
And it's like me who like now you can't catch me dead eating at a potluck or like a buffet. And then I was like drinking cups like out of. Like, I don't know whose cup this is. I'm going to drink it.
You know, honestly, even when we went and did the drunk Harry Potter train, we were still drinking strangers' cups. So I don't think we've... We still make bad choices. Like, we...
This is why I can't be the DD ever.
Like, this is why I can't drink anymore.
Yeah, I cannot be... I know I have... is like Eliza's, I have like my party goblin and like it comes out, it's either like Macho Man Randy Savage or Snooki. There is no in between with me. Like there is no like
casual. If you don't go as Snooki dressed as Macho Man Randy Savage for Halloween, I am not your friend anymore.
It's just like I have, you know, I make a lot of good choices about a lot of things. I'm pretty confident in my decision making skills, but when I, under the influence of any substance, cannot be trusted to make good decisions. Like, not like harmful decisions, but I'm going
to
put
you. You can be trusted to make fun decisions, but they might not be like the safest.
They are never the safest.
But you're going to have a great time.
I remember at Ball State one evening, I woke up on our friend's back patio. Like I slept outside and I was like,
what? I remember that you were mad at me. You said that I let you do that. You were like, yeah, you let me sleep outside and get sick. And I was just like, bro, what?
I didn't even know where you were for the last 6 hours. How did you get back here?
I felt bad about it though. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I let her sleep outside.
I literally slept on the cement outside. I have broken my teeth off. I am like, ready for an adventure. You can be like, do you want to walk here? And I'd be like, yes. You don't even know.
Bilbo Baggins.
I am. I'm like, let's go find the ring. Like, let's go. Most of the time.
Halfway there, we were like, what are we looking for?
What are we doing? There were times like I would leave. I'm very thankful that we did have, and if you're listening to this and you're one of those solid dudes that we used to hang out with, we had a very solid group of guy friends that I genuinely felt safe with. I think that's why I did so many like stupid things, because I felt safe.
So much dumb shit. I because safe to make bad choices. Those are the friends you gotta have.
Yeah, because like we would all be hammered, but like if someone else was creepy towards us, they'd be like, no, we're out of here. But I would leave with a couple of them and keep. We were in high school. I was not in college at this time. And we would just go to frat parties and like walk down the street. And it's like, how did I not get arrested? How am I still alive? How was I not? Like, you did everything safe. And I was like, I never got abducted. Like, what the? I should have been gone. Like,
that happened way before that.
It's sometimes okay. I just lay in bed and think, I am so lucky to be alive today.
Let's make some more bad choices.
Let's make some more bad choices.
I'm so lucky. What can I do to laugh? Like, just look luck down in the face and be like, come on. Can you keep up?
I did that at our Discord live this weekend because I got hammered. Like, the wine that we had, I have like these mason jars of like wine I bought from this winery, and I drank two of them. Usually I drink like a half of one and I'm like, oh, I'm good. I drank two of those, two barefoot spritzers. I woke up on like, what was it, Saturday, thinking like, I'm going to feel dead today. I didn't. And I was like, I don't know how. I think it's still like that migraine treatment.
A thing or a bad thing.
I think it's that migraine, because usually I get like a bad headache, but I think it's, I have that lidocaine thing on like my sphincter or whatever back there. And I think it really did help because I didn't have a hangover.
Phenopalatine.
Yeah, that thing. If that ever wears off, I'm going straight back to the ER because that's been the best thing. But
that's pretty cool. I had never heard of that before. You said it was a sphenopalatine block they put in for your migraine?
Yeah. So I went to the ER like a month ago with I get migraines like once a month. I get like Botox in my forehead for them. And it's usually like I can keep them pretty managed. But I had one that it took me to the ER, which is I tried everything. Like everything I had here, down to like an edible, to be like, I got to get rid of this headache. And then I was just hungry with a headache. It didn't help at all.
So you couldn't open your eyes to eat.
The next day, I still had the migraine. So my husband's like, look, we got to go to the ER. And they did. They literally they like flushed my nose with lidocaine and then soaked these CTAs in lidocaine and then shoved them all the way back there. I sat there for like 30 minutes, I think, 30, 45 minutes. It felt weird, but I have not had a headache since.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I
had a migraine 2 days ago, and I got the Aura because I get an Aura in my right eye every time. Mm-hmm. It was like I just finished like working on some stuff, and I stood up, and my right eye was like whited out. I was like, no, it's coming. Yeah, sure enough.
Mine's
15 minutes later.
Like, it's like I feel it in my neck and my teeth, and it's always like the right side of my face.
You should probably get Botox in your jaw then. Like in your TMJ.
Maybe.
Do you clench at night?
Nope.
Are you sure?
I'm a mouth.
Write down your back molars and feel the muscles there. Do they feel strong? Like, can you feel them poke out?
Mm-hmm.
It's because you clench at night.
I probably clench all day. I have anxiety.
I'm clenching constantly.
These battles are brought to you.
Yeah, it could be. You're just stress clenching for sure.
And usually I do it when I'm like about to say something stupid. I'll be like, okay, I'm just going to bite my tongue here.
Just clench it as hard as it can go. No one will ever know.
I'm glad it does. My husband grinds his teeth so bad. Like, his jowls are significant. Like, it
they're powerful.
Yeah. Like, he has a very solid jawline because of it.
I clench pretty much all night. I clench, like, and then I have super vivid dreams, and it feels like I didn't sleep at all. Even though I've been asleep for 8 hours.
I think I have sleep apnea. It's actually on my list to get a study, because I wake up so much during the night. That is my only explanation.
I'm going to start making a list every time you tell me you think you have a thing. Mm-hmm. You should keep a note.
I do. And I bring it up. And the sad thing is, a lot of times I'm correct. Unfortunately.
They're like, you know what? Maybe you do. Your symptoms match up. Let's treat it. See if it goes away. If it does, cool. If not, maybe another thing.
Well, I thought, like, because I had my nose surgery, so I thought that my deviated septum would be, like, fix my snoring. But I still snore a little bit. And I wake up every day feeling like I didn't sleep anything. Like, I never am in a solid sleep. A lot of times I don't even get into a deep enough sleep to dream. I just like feel like I'm just kind of floating, and then that's it. I wake up like probably 10 times at night.
No, every night my dreams are so weird and vivid every single night that I wake up, and it feels like I've just been living life in my head. And I can like change the things that I'm doing in my dreams. Like, if it's kind of scary, I can like think real hard and like shift it. It's kind of cool. That is one of the cool parts of it.
I only get like that if I eat a gummy and then I have the gnarliest dreams. They're my favorite. It's my favorite.
I would just love to like wake up and feel well rested with no dreams.
What does that feel like?
Nothing. Yeah. Do you guys do it? Anybody?
Any recommendations if you're waking up a million times at night? Like, help me. Help a sister out.
We're tired.
I'm so fucking tired. Always. It's like a perpetual state for me at this point. I don't even think I would know what to do if I felt well rested. What if maybe one time we felt well rested, we thought we were sick. We're like, this feels different. I'm getting sick. I have too much energy. I'd probably sit sitting on the couch like, whoa, this is awesome. I feel great.
I have enough energy to watch all six seasons of this. I have energy when I wake up until about 3 o'clock. And after that, my brain does not work anymore.
Oh, no, I'm an idiot.
The hours that we were in school or like those are the hours that my brain is like, all right, you're on. And then once that drops off, I'm done.
Oh, no, I'm an ADHD moonlighter. So it's like
2 a.m.
very slow to get going. But like I do my best cleaning, work, all of it from like 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. Those are it's my peak hours.
I wish that was true. But you know what? It's like, I know this is going to sound backwards, but it is hard to be a morning person. Do you know how many times I've been told that I'm too much or I'm annoying specifically in the morning or like I need to calm down? It is so frustrating to just be like, hi, how are you? At 8 in the morning and people be like, no, don't talk to me.
I'm like, fuck okay, off.
Please kill my vibe harder. Please make me feel more like shit. Thank you.
It's like, good. Now you feel like we do. Go away. I can get up easily. I'm just like, I just don't like it.
I just don't like being up.
No, I love to sleep during the day. I am a professional napper. Like, that is my jam. I disappear off the grid for like 3 hours at a time. I'm like, sorry, I just took the gnarliest nap.
That is true. That does happen sometimes.
Then I just still live my life at night. Like, that's probably why I don't. Maybe it's all making sense. Maybe I don't have sleep apnea. Maybe I sleep too much during the day.
Could be it. Maybe. You never know. My husband, who also has ADHD, was getting mad the other day because I was like, okay, we have to do the dishes. We have to clean up this living room. We have to do this. And he was like, you got to stop saying have to. You got to stop saying have to. Like, mm-hmm. I can't have to do anything. Like, I was like, okay, you get to do the dishes. You get to clean the living room. And I'll do this one and you do this one. And he was like, he was frustrated. I tried to adjust the language.
Like, I don't like the have to. And if you give me more than 3 things to do, you better just wipe that list because I'm not doing anything. I have my rule of 3 and it's just my brain will shut down. It's too much. Like, it's like, okay, you can tell me you have to vacuum. And actually it's like, we need to vacuum. We need to do the dishes and we need to clean up the living room. But anything else, you just wait. And then like, once I complete these 3 tasks, then we can add more to it.
Yeah, if I say like need or half or it's time to, anything that insinuates like that it's mandatory is a no-go. Like it's got to be very well-placed.
Yeah, we don't want to be, it's like as soon as you try to make us do something, our brain's like, no.
That doesn't give me dopamine.
That's like a defiant disorder at that point.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's not ADH at all. Maybe it's just opposition.
Well, and also you feel like then you get stressed. Like, am I going to let them down? Like, they want me to do this and it's something I have to do. What if I don't do it well? And then you panic and then you don't do it. That's what I do.
You're like, I'll just not do anything. That will save me.
Mm-hmm.
I know you can't help it. I'm not making fun of you. I'm just...
It's hard. And I think that's the worst thing about ADHD is because it's perceived as laziness a lot of the time. Like if I have an appointment at like 3 o'clock from like 11 to 2:30 when I have to leave, I don't do anything because I'm just thinking like, you have an appointment. You have to do this later. Like you have this. And then I get into this like paralysis where it's like, I'm going to just sit here.
Look, you can't change the way your brain works. You can't change the way you feel. It's not laziness. You're just like, you're adapting to what you have to do with what you have to do it with. You know, it's, there's nothing wrong with that.
But let me hyper focus on cleaning. And then this shit is top tier. Top tier.
I do. What were you? You got into like a hyper focus state on, broken Discord the other day. And I was like, we got to start. And you were just like, I'm fixing this. And I was like, come back to me. Get out of there.
We were like in the middle of it. It's hard to break it because that's all I think about. And there are times like if I'm like, I am hyper focusing on something and I'm trying to go to sleep, my brain is like, but that Discord, like, what are you going to do about the Discord? And I'm like, I have to fucking fix it. Ah.
Oh, life.
Yeah. C'est la vie. On that note,
I was like, you got anything else?
No, but thank you for letting me ramble at the end of it, because I was thinking about the description of what happened to Mark Kilroy and it was giving me this. It made me feel sick.
It was gruesome.
It was. You usually don't give it. Like, usually you're not. I was not expecting that. I've never heard this case before.
Yeah, I hadn't either. I got
it's the wire in the spine. That's
spinal cord. Yeah, that was fucked up. That was a case within a case within a case that I found. And I ended up was like you start on one and you're like, oh, with this. And then it gets you to this one. That's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I'm bummed out again. So we'll see you guys next week.
Okay.
Thank you so much for listening to Gruesome, Horrific, True Crime, a Zencaster-powered podcast. Seriously, we wouldn't be here without them. Zencaster is simple to use and makes it easy to edit your own podcast. Zencaster gives you automatic, high-quality post-production sound, transcription, and HD video recordings of all of your episodes. If you want to start a podcast, and we think you should, click the link in the show notes or at our website and use the code GRUESOME with a capital G for 30% off your first 3 months.
We love you, beautiful strangers. And if you love us too, here are some ways that you can support Gruesome. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or a 5-star rating on Spotify. This helps other true crime connoisseurs find us. Follow us at Gruesome Podcasts on Instagram or TikTok and talk to us on our posts.
Join the Patreon. Sign up to join our True Crime Sticker of the Month Club and gain access to bonus episodes and exclusive Patreon perks. Or if a one-time donation is more your thing, we have a Venmo at Gruesome Podcast and a PayPal via our email, gruesomepodcast@gmail.com.
Speaking of which, we love hearing from you. It seriously makes our whole life. So send us your questions, comments, suggestions, or just ask our opinion on whether that person you met on Tinder is a serial killer or not.
Tune in next week, and don't forget, lock your windows, lock your doors, and on Wednesdays,
we're gruesome.
Bye.
Bye.